My supervisors, my middle management, they are my secret sauce. I can't take care of, there's 32 of us now. I can't take care of 32 people, but I can take care of my three, who then take care of their people and so on, right? Mm. We've built systems so that the middle management can be strengthened. We've structured their work days so that they're half delivery, but then the other half working on their supervisees. Right. And so they're doing that individual supervision, but it's not just clinical supervision. They're cheerleading, they're problem solving, they're mm-hmm. what's getting in the way? Like, how are we going to develop your talent?
Welcome to the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by renewing your mind and giving you new ways to think. I am your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is the Janelle Miller Moravec. She is the executive director of Youth and Family Counseling, a nonprofit that opens doors to mental health care so people can cope, heal, and thrive. The big three. For vision, leadership, and passion for improving access to mental health care has steered YFC, yeah, you know me, steady growth over her 15-year tenure at the place. She is also a wife, a mom to three humans, and two dogs. So she has as many kids as I do. Welcome to the show, Janelle.
Thanks, Kenny. I'm excited to be here today.
I am excited to have this conversation. We had a blast on our first conversation. Probably should have recorded that too. As like a bonus episode. Maybe I'll launch a Patreon where I do like the initial conversations. There we go. And then I'll split the revenue with the guests. This is how we monetize. But I feel like that's a different episode for a different podcast. But tell me today, Janelle, what is on your mind?
Gave me a heads up that that was the question you'd be starting with. And I've been thinking about that a lot. And I actually asked my husband last night, I'm like, I want to be on this podcast tomorrow. And I know he's going to ask me, like, what am I chewing on? What's on my mind? And I have so many things on my mind, right? And I think most leaders do at the beginning of any year, right? I'm half stuck in 2025, like trying to wrap that up, put a bow on it. Mm-hmm. And I'm launching 2026. So I'm a little bit all over the place. And my husband, he said to me, I can't even believe you're asking me that question. He goes, it's your people. I was like, you're right. I'm so worried about my people. Like, I keep chewing on, how do I take care of my people? Let me back up a minute. I know that when I take care of my people, my employees can mm-hmm. take care of their clients. And that's what we're all about here, right? Helping our clients mm-hmm. cope, heal, and thrive. Doesn't right. happen if I don't take care of my employees. Yeah. In the nonprofit workforce, right? It's hard to take care of your people. There's this overwhelming scarcity mindset. We're primarily women. Some of us live in low-income households themselves, have financial hardship. Some of us do not make a living wage. And so how I have always grappled with, for reasons of retention, recruitment, whatever, you know, uh-huh. how do I take care of my people so that they can do their jobs? We've worked really hard at that at YFC, and I'm so proud that today our workforce, our clinical workforce, reflects the diversity of the clients we serve. And that's great. Huge. Mm-hmm. And most of us are paid at the living wage level. I'm making huge progress. And I can see it in the data, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're delivering more sessions with the same number of people. More clients are completing treatment. They're having better outcomes because they're mm-hmm. completing treatment. So I know that all this is happening. And at the same time, what I'm chewing on in my head is, what's next? Like, how do I top off what I've already done? Because, yeah, I'm focused on compensation. That's a baseline, right? Mm-hmm. Compensation and benefits. Last year, we were all about manageable work. And so that was, you know, a lot of last year was making the work manageable so that people didn't burn out.
Mm-hmm.
And as I think about what's next in all of our things, just day-to-day life and strategic priorities, right? We always want to grow. I also think about the environment we're operating in, and this word that keeps coming to mind is safety. Rest. So, safety, right? Do I literally have to keep my employees and my clients safe? Like, I don't know. There's psychological safety in that. And how do I preserve their jobs for the long run? As an organization that exists in the scaffolding of Medicaid, as the Medicaid system is unraveled, what does that mean for my ability to sustain this organization and keep my people? So that's what I'm chewing on.
Yeah. Well, it's a mouthful.
I don't know if that's what you were expecting or wanted, but
I have no expectations. I just expect people to show up and have something to say. So far you're killing it. and which I knew you would, but so in taking care of your people, I like that you said, hey, last year and you had a focus on workload management. I think that there's a lot of people that don't spend enough time on that. Coming from my first 7 years of professional entrepreneurial outing, workload management was something that came up quite a bit with digital marketing agencies, because it is so time and people intensive to deliver things. Now, a lot of that is changing in light of AI, but you know, I was out of the game when all of that started to burst on the scene. So I love that. And thinking about safety, because I have to imagine some of this builds on itself, because you've been with YFC for 15 years, and you shared a bit of your backstory in our first conversation when we were meeting, but you weren't the original founder,
no.
Right? You came on and you have this great story, which I think maybe in a part two would be great. But to go from, hey, we're doing okay, to you're almost like you're eating your own dog food and you're coping, you've healed and now you're thriving as a practice. Mm-hmm. But what I hear you saying is there's a lot outside of not just yours, but the practice's control that could impact multiple variables that make it possible for you to provide excellent care and services. Because would you agree that practitioners or the counselors themselves, because of the work they're doing, it takes a lot out of you. So it's almost incumbent on yourself and those around you to help you stay safe. Like the classic, you can't save someone from drowning while you're drowning yourself. But that's always been the case, like throughout history, right? Is that there's societal, technological, political, environmental changes. I think they just probably rotate or they manifest a little differently, you know, something appropriate for the times. What are some of the common wisdoms and nuggets that maybe you've heard from peers who are also executive directors, leading clinics, and practices, that you think, I think that may have worked at one time, but I don't think it's serving us any longer?
That's a good question. And I've given this a lot of thought. And I'm going to tell a little story. I had a clinical director pre-COVID who was an amazing executor and implementer. And it was amazing. We were a great team because I could go off and do the ideas and come back and we'd figure out a structure and then she'd put it in and then I'd go off and do the next thing. And she kept saying to me, stop, I'm still over here and you're on to the next thing. I'm like, well, that's kind of our jobs, right? But her points were always well taken in that it takes so long to fully implement anything. And think about psychological safety. You're talking about culture, right? And relationships. Yeah. It takes a long time. And so I think that what I would tell myself is slow down.
Do you see your peers or others trying to speed up to maybe like stay ahead of some curve, or is kind of like Indiana Jones trying to outrun the rolling boulder sort of situation?
That's kind of what it feels like. And in COVID, 2020, 2021, there was so much coming at us so fast, right? Telehealth wasn't a thing before COVID, and then it became a thing. Like this organization, and I think many small practices, and at the time we weren't as big as we are now. You know, we were paper based. We worked because you had to see your clients on site. There was no other acceptable way to do it. There was no telehealth. And then COVID overnight changed how we deliver, how we store data, how we do our jobs. Mm-hmm. And that was really chaotic because, mm-hmm. right, they're building tools and we're implementing better tools all the time. And that felt really chaotic. I feel like we're finally getting our feet underneath us and like, whoop, we can breathe. And mm-hmm. now, very much like that, everything's changing all at once. And so I think for me, this feels a lot like COVID era of just change after change after change after change. And you can't slow down because they're coming at you faster than you can adapt, or because it takes time to adapt.
Right. Just like it takes time to implement something can take a while. Do you, being that you have 15 years at this position, obviously you have a career that goes back further than that, but just specific to YFC and all that y'all have seen, do you feel that the pace of change has increased over time? And do you think that maybe COVID was a bit of an inflection point of like it started changing faster than normal or what had been normal?
I think it is a faster pace of change. I also think that there are a couple of other things in my sector of mental health that are also driving a sense of urgency. And that is the acuity. So the prevalence and acuity of people seeking care is higher than it's ever been. So, right, not only are we trying to change, but we're also seeing demand like we've never seen before. And
is that because there's genuinely a need, a greater need, or just it's losing the stigma that once held people back from even seeking it? Or both?
I think it's both. I think there's still stigma, but you're right, it's not as much. And there was a workforce shortage. So there was a workforce shortage going into COVID. So in 2017-18, Illinois mm-hmm. actually said we are in a state of a workforce shortage in behavioral health care. Mm. Okay. And they established a whole workforce center, and they've been looking at all of these things of how we can grow that pipeline of therapists. It takes a long time to grow a therapist, like 7 years. So you gotta start right away. The workforce shortage going into COVID, remember how I started the conversation? I said most of us in this nonprofit space are women. And in COVID, a lot of women stepped away. They had to deal with their own families. They got burned out. Behavioral health was one of the top five fields to experience just massive loss of workers. Yeah. And now here we are. Post-COVID, Illinois has 24% of the workforce it needs to meet the need for behavioral health care. That's a staggering number, right?
Yeah.
And so I think it's, yes, people are, I mean, we're better informed than we were a few years ago. So people are presenting, they're being referred more often, we have better screening tools, and there's less stigma, and there aren't as many providers. And so that makes it hard, right? Just as a society.
Right. Yeah, when the access gets limited, and as we mentioned before, this can create a difficulty on the provider themselves, because generally, it's been my experience, people get into the field of behavioral health because they tend to be a compassionate individual who may have grown up with, been around, experienced themselves some form of behavioral health crisis or challenges. And they say, hey, I think I can make a difference. I think I could help other people navigate this well or overcome this or maybe avoid this big pothole that, you know, me and my family went through. And so I think it all comes from a good place. But I think that that's what also, it's a two-edged sword, just like anything. That's also that very nature is what can lead you to burnout when I can imagine your providers are over and above the cases or the patients and clients that they have. They probably feel the weight of the need of, like, there's more I'm not getting to. There's more people that need to be helped than we as a collective or me as an individual can get to. How are you coaching your therapists and counselors through that to help them carry the weight? Because you have two options, which is where I think you were navigating to with the what's on your mind and taking care of your people is, if you're lifting a heavy weight, you can either take weight off of the bar, so to speak, if we're thinking bench press, you can take weight off the bar, make it lighter, or you can get stronger and have a greater ability to lift the weight, right? Yeah. But in your case, you're not totally in control or barely in control of the weight that's being put on the bar. So it's almost that you have to empower, encourage, and strengthen the staff you have in order to lift what may feel like an ever-increasing weight.
Yeah.
So what does that mean for you as a leader? You're almost like counseling counselors, which is a fun place to be in.
Yeah.
How do you go about doing that? Because, you know, like, doctors make the worst patients sort of things. And, you know, I can imagine counselors are like, I know what technique and modality you're trying to use on me. Like, that won't work. How do you go about doing that effectively?
It's funny you say that modality won't work on me, because I actually encouraged my supervisors to think about their staff as their clients. Like, they're like your work clients. Mm-hmm. So part of it, I realized, right? I can't take bars off. I can't take the plates off the bar, right? So I have to strengthen. And my supervisors, my middle management, they are my secret sauce. They hold us up through so much. So I can't take care of, there's, I mean, 32 of us now. I can't take care of 32 people. But I can take care of my three, who then take care of their people, and so on, right? Mm. But I've really encouraged, and we've built systems so that the middle management can be strengthened, and we've structured their work days so that they're half delivery, but then the other half, they're really working on their supervisees. Right. And so they're doing that individual supervision, but it's not just clinical supervision, right? They're cheerleading, they're problem solving, they're what's getting in the way? Like, how are we gonna develop your talent? How are we gonna do all these things? And they are making sure they take time off. So we added last year conversations like, okay, so you have 3 weeks vacation. It's the beginning of the year. When are you taking your vacation? Let's block it off. Let's plan for it now, because you can't wait until the end of the year. You're going to be too burned out, right? So how we are really trying to think about, and this is where the having policies and benefits and compensation is so important,
Yeah.
Right? So there's an organizational role in preventing burnout, and that's making sure we have benefits. So you have sick time. So if you're sick, including feeling overwhelmed or just not being able to come in, that you don't have to come in. But then also respite. Respite is so important, and making sure that employees are using regular respite throughout the year to come, to go, recharge, come back.
You can't pour from an empty cup sort of thing.
No. So that was part of that manageable work was, making sure that we were talking about the systems, the structures, the boundaries, how to come back the next day and the day after that and the day after that and the day after that. Because this is a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Oh, 100%. Something you mentioned struck me as odd in a good way. The way in which you talk about middle management being a key, because I think a lot of times that middle management gets skipped over. It's like executives and frontline. Like the executives are calling shots, making decisions. The frontline just need to get the work done. And a lot of times middle management just becomes almost like a megaphone. Now, should they help in the relaying of communication and reinforcement? 100%. But it sounds like you were really intentional to push that domino over first and invest in them before you started just like, all right, we're going to have an all hands, meeting, or we're going to do some training, we're going to encourage you all, we're going to do this, we're going to... Like you really focused in on your three, on your middle layer, and helped them. And it sounds like you co-created some systems, some process, some things with them. Can you talk about how you got started doing that? Because I have to imagine there are people who, A, don't think about their middle management that way, or B, they do, and they're just not sure, well, how much do I include them? How much authority and autonomy do I give them? If they're doing all of that, what am I doing? Like, you can sort of like your role fluctuates over time and that can hit your identity in some really unexpected ways. Can you talk about how you got started and engaged them and maybe some of the feedback they gave you and contributed?
Yeah, I realized that my clinical director and I were burning out on trying to move everybody. And it's really hard to, moving people is the hardest thing you can do. Getting them to change behaviors or care about something is really hard. And in my way is explain the why, and then this is what we're going to do about it, and then, then let's go, right? So I realized the first people that I needed to be my early adopters were my middle management. And so we actually spent a long time. We did all kinds of HR trainings. They understand the life cycle of an employee, all of those foundational HR concepts, motivation, giving feedback, talent development, proficiencies, competencies. We went over it all, trained it all, here's the YFC way. And that made a huge difference, because what that did is that really helped them see the organizational perspective, right? Middle managers are caught in the middle. They're caught between, organizational needs and the needs of their employees. And they're constantly negotiating that. And I realized they didn't really have the tools to do that, because they didn't even understand their employees, right? They didn't always understand organizational priorities. So really bringing them up into that space of having conversations about why and what's our business model and how do we make money and how do we compensate people and what are the rules? And I was completely transparent, right? Here's how I pay people. Here's how I think about it, And that was huge, because then when they understand it, then they care. And when they understand it and they care, then they can turn around and explain it to their people and make them care. In fact, Kenny, what was so funny to me is we just switched human resource information systems. We got kicked off ours because they went a different route. So we had to go on another one. And we actually did not do an all staff training. We only trained the managers. I know.
For those who are only listening, I did the Kevin McAllister Home Alone. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Because what was going to happen? We all know this, right? Everyone could watch videos. Then they're going to have questions. And who are they going to ask?
Their supervisors.
Because I was going to do the training, right? You do the training before you do it. And then they go to do it and they don't remember the training. So, like, let's just skip that whole piece.
I love that. Practically, yeah. Thinking critically. What a novel idea. If only more people embrace this.
Yeah.
So how long did it take of that investment and sort of plowing in this new way? Because some people will think, well, it's either going to take forever or this should happen in the next 30, 60, 90 days, which I would say, hey, you might be doing drugs if that's your expectation. Seek help. But what was the realistic timeline of we got to chart a new path to, hey, I feel like this is working and now we can sort of just drop new things like this HR system into the process and rhythm we have and trust that the outcome is far more likely to be what we want it to.
I spent a quarter just doing straight up understanding concepts.
Right. Just like from a business perspective.
From a business perspective, yeah.
Okay.
And then it was about another 6 to 8 months before they were really ready to engage and have the active participants in conversations. So I started in the summer, at the end of the summer of 2024. So come 2025, mm-hmm. we stepped in it together. And by the time we got to budgeting mm-hmm. conversations in August, mm-hmm. they were problem solving with me.
Wow.
Right? So it wasn't easy. And I don't think we're done.
Sure.
Because we're never done. But now I have really strong middle managers who are growing and leaning into their roles and are more effective, right? So I'm mm-hmm. excited to see what they're going to do with their teams this year.
It sounds like you now have something to build off of as opposed to like you're laying all the foundation, right? Like, you know, once a plane gets up in the air, it's not done flying, but it has to get off the ground. And it sounds like you've now kind of gotten off the ground and now you can start answering different questions than you were before when you were laying the foundation.
But right now, they're working on let's have a conversation about our standard of care, because now we're wanting to think about not just taking care of our clients inside the room, mm-hmm. but how do we help them navigate the chaos of SNAP, and we have a lot of Medicaid clients. So the mm-hmm. SNAP and changes in Medicaid and work requirements and all of that, which means we've got to be trained. So, you know, how are we going to think about that? What are we going to say? This is the YFC way. I'm not saying it. Katie, my clinical director, isn't saying it. We're going to come up with it together because we all need to buy in if we're all going to, it's not me who's going to be, I'm not a clinician. I'm a fundraiser. Mm-hmm. It's not me who's going to be upholding and actually delivering on the standard of care. It's
right.
The people in the trenches. So.
Right. Yeah. Sounds like you're leaning into the, I don't know if it's a quote necessarily, but the people closest to the work are the ones who should be informing the standards, the processes, informing how we do the work.
They should be informing it. Absolutely. I don't know that they always get to say where we're going because they don't have the knowledge that I do or their managers do, but also they do the jobs. So we need to incorporate their voices into the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. I've heard it say that, you know, everybody falls into three categories when it comes to decision making. They either get a view, a voice, or a vote.
Mm.
So sometimes people just need to be informed. They need a view into it. Like, what decision did we make? Why are we making it? Okay, cool. Thanks for letting me know. Other people, it's like, hey, we need to hear from you because you have experiential or academic knowledge or something else that we need to know, or your position informed. Like you said, you're not a clinician. Yeah. They are. You need to hear from the clinicians to make decisions about clinicians. And then there's other people, it sounds like you and your closer group, y'all have a vote on, like, where do we finally land, because the final accountability rests with y'all.
Yes. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah.
So what, being that you are more visionary, you're looking down the road a little further than everybody, and that's part of your wiring, but also part of the position, right? Mm-hmm. As executive director, given the hard work you've put in over the last, 18 or so months, as of this recording, what excites you most about what is now possible?
Even though I said that it feels like the change is happening really fast.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm excited about is that I have a team to lean into, and that's with you. I'm not alone. I felt alone in a lot of COVID. But I don't feel like I'm alone, and I think there's more that I can do on that front, because on the one hand, I try to protect my team from the chaos of the world, right? Because I just want them to, come in and be able to do their jobs and feel good, and be satisfied, so that they come
focus
back
on the work,
right?
Yeah.
And I think I'm figuring out how to navigate, manage, balance that with, hey, this stuff is going on that's impacting the organization, and I don't want to freak you out, but we got to talk about it as a group, right?
Yeah.
Right. So I feel like they trust me. Which is, I think, important too.
Yeah, which is paramount. When you said it's like, don't freak you out, but I want to show you this, I thought of a line from what Apple Music said was my number one album last year, the soundtrack to K-pop's Demon Hunters. There's a line in a song, Free, that says, we can't fix it if we never face it. Which I think so much of leadership is being able to establish, discern, and name the reality so that you and the other leaders around the quote-unquote table can actually do something to address the challenges in front of you. Because, Simon Sinek wrote a whole book about this, is that, business, organizational development, all of that, it's an infinite game. It has no ending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The goal of the game is to perpetuate the game.
Yes, I am just, at the end of the day, I've always said, I will be successful if I am not sitting in this chair and someone else is and nobody notices, right? Like that's the game. To be sustaining without it being all about a person, it should be, I'm holding it in trust, right? I'm protecting, holding in trust this organization, moving it along the timeline until the next person's turn, and then they pick it up and they're doing that same thing.
There's a part of the work I do with leadership teams that comes from the predictable success model called the enterprise commitment, and that sounds a lot like what you're describing. I believe Inc. magazine called the enterprise commitment like the 20 most important words in leadership or business or something like that. But it says, whenever I'm working in a group of two or more people, I will place the interests of the enterprise ahead of my own. Which really is, the enterprise is an entity with needs, challenges, wants, optimizations, preferences, and that changes over time as more or less people are there, as different types of people. It's different under your leadership than it was under the previous leadership. Like, all those pieces make a difference, but no one person, what I hear you saying is you are not greater than the organization and its purpose.
Correct. I didn't know that those were words. I'm going to have to go find that now.
I will email them to you because I have endless PDFs with them. I even have one where you can cut it out.
Ooh, I would.
So that's
all about visual reminders.
Yes. I even have some teams I'll coach to read that out loud before their meetings just to set their minds and their context. Because so often we come into, especially like leadership meetings, like just busy from everything. And your to-do list is what's burning hot on your mind and not thinking about, okay, now I got to think about the whole organization and all, you know, 30 some odd people. You know, sometimes it takes a little gear shifting to get there. But I'll send that to you. And I'll make that available. We'll put a link in the show notes if anybody is interested in that, because it's a simple phrase, but it changes your perspective. And a small change in perspective can lead to big outcomes. The thing I wanted to ask you then, to connect back to initially what you were saying about taking care of your people and safety, given the infrastructure that you've been describing you've built and poured time and effort and investment into, how are you thinking about going about creating safety? Because now it's not necessarily just Janelle creating safety. It's this team of people who can do that. Now, you may float the idea or the word or the concept, but that's not where it's going to stay. So, yeah. Well, how are you thinking about engaging the team and creating that safety this year that just, strengthens your providers and the staff at large?
I keep coming back to policies, and I can't train my people and make them feel secure if we don't have policies that ground us. And so I love HR. And so what's our mission? What's the how, right? Those are your policies. It's mission and how, right? Put together. So defining it, being transparent is where I am starting. And I have a wonderful talent for making things more complicated than they need to be. Because
you too.
I love envisioning and thinking about projects. And then I have to remind myself, good enough. It has to be good enough. Doesn't have to be perfect. Doesn't have to, am I going to win a prize for having the best policy? No. I need a good enough policy, though, that I will protect, for example, my staff, my clients, right? If we have ice up here, if ice comes,
How do you define good enough when you're setting out to create something, whether it's a new policy or considering a new program or something else? That could be a very fluid, ethereal thing, because it sounds good and someone listening's like, yeah, I just need to get to good enough. But then that perfectionistic side of themselves and that little voice in their head when they sit down it's gotta be perfect. And if I screw it up, then I screw this up and then we're out of business and I'm homeless and I'm like, you catastrophize. How do you get into good enough so that you can continue moving and not be frozen or paralyzed?
I think at the beginning, I'll decide if it's good enough with what I know, right? Have I done everything that I've done? Have I used the experts I can in a reasonable way? But at the end of the day, I'll find out if it's good enough, depending on how many changes I have to make, right? Mm-hmm. So I feel like our handbook, it was good enough. Our employee handbook was good enough for a long, long, long time.
Uh-huh.
And then as we grew, right, the handbook, the policies needed to be updated because the world changed and people were working differently and they were coming to us with different things. And so it every year it gets updates because now good enough is the needle moved. And now it's good enough. So.
I like that. Yeah, it's good enough until it's not.
Yes, thank you. It's very succinct.
The guy who actually, he wrote the book Predictable Success, Les McEwen, in one of his trainings, he talks about, he goes, you need just enough structure to not be put in jail.
Yes.
right? Because right. you can, especially for anybody with the growth you've experienced, which is you know, about like, I don't know, what, 6x growth over the course of time that you've been, you know, leading?
At least 5, yeah.
5 to 6x growth, which is no small feat, is the structure you needed to hit sort of like 1x, 2x, 3x, like you needed a little bit more. But if you over-engineer it on that growth curve up, you might stifle innovation or make it to where you can't really move. You need enough structure to keep moving forward and not go to jail. Yep. Which I'm a fan of you know, that sort of structure. There's a lot of ways you could step off in it, especially on the HR side, which is why I think it's always been wise that I maintain a single person company. Because I'm the only one who can report me to HR, and I am HR. But
it works.
If somebody's listening to this, a leader, and they say, you know what, I've been thinking about how I can take better care of my people, because I tend to start from a place believing most people want to do a good job, and if you're in a leadership position, nobody sets out saying, I just want to be the most god-awful leader who ever walked the face of the planet, and I want to be everybody's horror story at happy hour. If they say, I want to take better care of my people, I want to invest in them and be a better leader, and what you've said has inspired them, but I don't know how could they take a baby step in the next 24 hours, spending little to no money to elevate their leadership in how they take care of people?
Understand their work. I think that would be the first. If you want to take care of your people, first you have to understand their work, right? And ask questions, because I think you'll be surprised at what people will tell you if their work entails that you had no idea. Right. Yeah. So I guess knowledge, bring your curiosity, use it to grow your knowledge. And then leaders can use their spaces to innovate, make things better, move things along. Right. That's our job. Yeah. There are lots of really great resources out there. I really liked Happy Healthy Nonprofit, which is a great book about burnout. And I talk a lot on my LinkedIn about these different topics. And I'm going to be doing my big blog post for the month tomorrow, and it's about burnout.
So nice.
And we do post this. Yeah. It will be fully landed.
Yes, which will be great. And if you'll send us a link back to that, we'll put that in the show notes once it's live. And then we'll also link up your LinkedIn in case somebody wants to connect or follow along with you.
Awesome.
I do actually have a follow-on question, which normally I don't on the final question, but all sorts of firsts for you on this podcast with me. New mic, new location, all these things. What is maybe one of your favorite questions to ask your people?
Can I have two?
I'll allow it.
Okay.
Everything's bigger in Texas, so I'll allow two questions.
Okay, yay. I ask everybody, how did we come to be talking today? Like, why? Tell me, how did you end up here talking to me? Whether it's a board member, an intern, a funder, you know. And then I have learned this. Tell me more. And if my kids ever listen to this, they will roll their eyes because I also use it on them. Tell me more. So I manage my reactions. Tell me more.
I love that. There's a guy, an author, and he's also a coach, Michael Bungay Sr. He wrote the book, The Coaching Habit, top 3 books for me all time. He uses the and what else, which is a lot like the tell me more, but the principle behind it, what you were saying, you really embodied it, which is stay curious just a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. And I think that and tell me more. And then I love the context of how did we come to be talking here today? That is one, I think I've heard variations on it, but not worded that way. And I really like that. So I'm gonna try that on some people today. Maybe even my children. How do we come to be talking here today? I don't know, Dad. You called me in here and forced me into this conversation. It's like, well, then that's how. Thank you for sharing.
Right.
Tell me more.
I want a nonprofit, and it's all got to come back to motivation.
Yeah, that's really good. Well, Janelle, thank you so much for spending time and dropping your knowledge, your hard-won wisdom on our listeners. If people do want to know more about you, in addition to LinkedIn, is there anywhere else that you would send them to learn more about you or youth and family counseling?
So our website, counselingforall.org, is all about YFC, and most of my stuff is on LinkedIn. It's the best place to learn more about me.
I love your domain. I think that was awesome that you were able to snag something like that simple and catchy. I'm always blown away at this point now when people have really good URLs and not something really weird or super long.
Right.
So, well,
it's interesting. People think that's our organization's name now. So it's kind of fun.
I was this close in reading to, like, my brain was like, this is Janelle from Counseling for All. And I was like, nope, that's not what it is. That's not what it says down here. So, but I appreciate you. And I hope to have you back, and we'll have some more fun and excitement and hopefully help some more people. To the listeners, thank you so much. You spent some time with me and Janelle, and we're grateful for it. We don't take that for granted. If you enjoyed this, like, rate, review, subscribe, smash whatever button is on your platform of choice. It would mean a lot. And leave a comment if you learned something, if you didn't learn something, if you loved something or hated something. All feedback can be good feedback. I may or may not cry, but that's fine. It's whatever. I now know more therapists. My tribe is growing. So, whatever it is, I would appreciate it. One, I make this show for all of you that listen. I enjoy these conversations. I get to meet people like Janelle, which is just like a huge blessing to me, but I want to drive value for you. So if you tell me I want this topic, this person, or I'm trying to learn more about this or develop this part of my leadership, I would love to know more about that so I can bring those things to you more often. And also, your interaction with the show helps us get in front of more leaders who are trying to take their next step in their journey. And it's a free and easy way to pay it forward. And won't that make you feel warm and fuzzy as you lay your head on your pillow tonight? But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see ya.